If you're sitting across from a 17-year-old right now who doesn't know what he wants to do, and he says, hey, Kyle, I think I want to be a Submariner. What do you say to him?
I tell him, go sleep under your coffee table for like a couple weeks and just tell me if you still like it.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Well, hello and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. And today we're doing something just a little bit different, actually a lot different. So I've been told a lot lately that I should probably be like putting more attention on the naval service that I did, the time I spent in the submarine service. And it's always a really hard thing to talk about. And not just that it's like difficult to talk about, it's just I don't know what is interesting to people. So I invited my dear friend Eric here to play the role of interviewer. So I thought it might be fun just to kind of get like your questions and your curiosity and see kind of like what you want to know about like what that journey was.
I am one, in all seriousness, Kyle, no joke around. I'm very honored to have this ability to interview you and to be able to sit, you know, sit digitally across from you because I essentially interview Kyle randomly because I find the silent service to be absolutely fascinating. Right. I find the whole idea of the and I have a lot of friends who are, you know, also into just like military history, who find the whole history and the whole idea of submarines to be kind of on the same level as space travel. And I still it's still kind of wild to me because you're a very, very, very intelligent person and you have like, you have a great attitude. Like nothing really, you're a duck, man. Like everything rolls off your back. And what I think it's funny is that that's always kind of like the stereotype of submariners is that you guys,
is it really?
I know a couple of submariners, and they're always the easiest going guys. Like nothing rocks them too much. Like, they take every joke well. Like, right. I don't know if that's part of like the mental stability they look for in submariners. Because I would go insane.
I think there is a mentality that you have to have in order to like lock yourself in a tube, and it probably does lend yourself to being a little more easygoing.
Yeah, lock yourself in a tube, put yourself under an insane amount of pressure, and then carry enough stuff to, you know, potentially end the world.
many times over,
yes.
Allegedly.
Neither. It's like, oh, you're in a ballistic, you're in a boomer class submarine. Well, it's like, oh, I have carried as many nuclear weapons as like the sixth biggest nuclear power in the entire world. Oh, fourth. All right. Good. Yes. China's been building up a lot.
Yeah, it might have changed since I've been there. At the time, it was the fourth.
Fourth. Yeah, wild. And it's, you know, it's one of those services where ideally you're never used on nuclear submarines. Like,
I tell you, that weighed in on my decision to join.
Actually. Really? Really? Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. So, you know, not to kick off the questions, but I'm very curious about this. So, like, Kyle, just to frame set, when did you serve? What was your, the day you signed up for the Navy?
Oh, God, the day? I don't remember the actual day. It was about 6 months before my actual deployment because they put you in the delayed entry program.
Okay.
So, when you sign the... this is funny, too. When I signed up, I did not sign up to be a nuke, which is why I ended up going in to be. I signed up to do a four-year tour, and they talked me into doing the extra two based on my ASVAB scores.
And what year was this?
This was 2002, so I think I was 1 year out of high school.
Okay. So you're like 19 years old?
Yeah. Turned 18 in high school, senior year. Yeah.
Did 9/11 play a role in deciding to join?
Not really. I mean, it had happened, and I think more that just like the tradition of service in my family probably played more of a role.
So can you dive into that? No pun intended. Can you dive into that a little bit? So you come from a military family?
Yeah, my dad, he was Air Force. My grandpa, he was Marine Corps. He was stationed in Okinawa. I can't remember if it was after the Korean War or right around that time. He did a couple of years over there.
Whoa!
Yeah, he had some really good stories to tell.
All right, so we have Air Force, so Marine Corps, above the water. We have Marine on the water. You're underneath the water. I'm assuming your children will do something involving digging into the air.
No, probably not. Hopefully we did a better job raising those two.
Oh, come on. Okay, so just for listeners who don't know about the ASVAB, so that's actually the modern IQ test. If you think of the IQ test, it was put into service before World War One to measure military aptitude. So can you walk through for listeners, like, what was the ASVAB? What did you score relative? Because I know being some matters considered very good. That's a very high ASVAB score.
I remember that the one I took in high school was no longer any good anymore when I went to go like sign
really?
Up.
Okay.
So they actually had to go take it a second time. I want to say I was in like the 70s, like high 70s to 80s.
Wow.
In that one. The weird thing with the ASVAB is it's graded relative to whoever you're taking it with. So if you're taking it at the school, it's going to be graded relative to everybody in that class. When I took it at the for delayed entry program, again, to certify that I was qualified for the rating I'd signed up for, that time I got a 99, but I think I only took it with like 30 other people.
Wow.
So I'm not sure how big that pool was, but that impressive. Percentage boost was actually enough for them to say, you should be a nuke.
That kind of walks me into my next question here, which is, you know, why did you join and did you have the intention? Like, it's like your background is you were an electrician essentially, right? Like you maintained the
nuclear.
That's a very desirable, very good skill set to have. I think a lot of listeners here who are maybe looking into going into one of those fields would be like, oh my God, if I could be an electrician on a submarine, yeah, I could wire a house. Is that what you thought you were going to do? Or did you get your AFAB scores and then sit down with a recruiter? What did that first step into it look like?
First step into it was, well, let me step back then. So I was working at Walmart at the time in an apartment. And I'd done like just a little reflection one day thinking like, where am I going to be in 5 years? And when I saw Walmart, I kind of panicked. So that was when I went into a recruiting station.
So you went into a recruiting station?
Yeah.
Just walked in? Okay.
Yeah, I went and found one. And it just happened to be the Navy guys that found me first. That was the guy standing up at front because their room was like all the way in the back. They had to walk you past like the Army and Marine Corps guys. So I think it was always... They were always out there front trying to poach him immediately. But I think I'm lucky that they're the ones that grabbed me because I probably would have gone with whoever got to me first.
So your family, Air Force, Marines, obviously Marines, Department of the Navy. Like, did anybody in your family say, hey, you should go talk to a recruiter if you're trying to figure this out? A lot of it was internal.
It was mostly internal. I mean, I moved out in my senior year in high school, like halfway through. I got my own apartment.
Awesome.
Like, I talked to my mom about it. I think she was concerned. She didn't really want me to do that, but more so because she just didn't think that I had the right mentality to thrive in a military situation. Yeah.
Did you come off in person as somebody I would fully expect to thrive in the military? Like, just the way you hold yourself?
I think it's more of my disregard for authority.
Okay. That just makes you a good soldier.
Yeah, not liking, like, structure. No. I was actually a terrible sailor. I got in trouble a lot.
I had a funny story from a Marine friend, and you know, he's funny because he told me a funny story one time about somebody getting demoted because they got like a tattoo or something, but then got a field promotion, and his captain, so this is an NCO, his captain was like, you are the ultimate Marine. you're climbing up while going down at the same time.
Dude, that's a real thing. Like, there's a period, like when you first get your first promotions, they call it your frocking period. Like when I got, NCO commission, so going from E3 to E4 and then E4 to E5, it was a 6 month period that I got to wear the stripes, but I wasn't getting paid for it. And if I got in trouble, I didn't go back down to what I was before. I still lost a rank below that. So you could be an E5, get in trouble, and then go all the way back to E3.
So real quick on the rank. So did you depart, separate from the service at what rank? E5?
E5.
E5.
Petty officer second class, yeah.
All right. And I believe an E5 is equivalent to a sergeant in the Army, correct?
It's like a staff sergeant, is it? I never remember the Army ones. They're weird. They have a lot of sergeants.
I know, like, yes, they do. It's E5 through E9 are all right, sergeants.
Yeah.
So I believe that's the, I don't know, I apologize to listeners. Like, I know that's the first title you get a sergeant at E5. So what did you oversee? Hold on. Before we go on to day-to-day operations, I really want to know what it was like. So you enroll. All right. Yep, you enlist. Yep. You go to boot camp, basic training. What do we call it?
Yeah, it's still boot. Yeah.
boot camp.
Yeah.
What was that process? So you had 6 months deferral. What are you doing for those 6 months? Are you working at Walmart? Are you greeting people?
You're just
like, what are you doing?
Waiting to go, basically, waiting for your number to get called.
What do you do in that 6 months? Are you just like
there's meetings they bring you to? So like they want you to like practice like certain like, you know, drills and like marching, and they'll have you do like things to like help you prepare for, but there's no preparing you for it really. It's basically just play soldier for a couple months until you go.
Do they do physical exercise? Is something involving MEPS? Like what does that look like?
Not in the DEP program. I didn't do any of that. When we got to boot camp, then there was a lot more obviously physical activity. I was kind of trying to talk to Laura about like what that was like, because there's this definite moment when you get to boot camp where like you're just like, oh shit, I'm fucked up. And that for me was like I think it was when we'd gotten off of the plane, we'd just gotten to like the actual like place where we're sitting and waiting. We're all sitting down against this wall with our backs to it, and they're just passing out like skivvies, your underwear, socks, like all the different shit that you're gonna have for your sea bag. And this is all the stuff that you're gonna have for the next 9 weeks, and you're just like, oh man, I really fucked up, didn't I?
Kyle, you mentioned get off the plane. So like let's do like 24 hours before, you're sitting there getting government issued underwear, which I gotta imagine is very itchy. You gotta imagine not high quality.
It was basically just your standard for the looms tidy whities. not comfortable.
Way better than I thought what it was. So did you like report to, now where are you living at this point? What state are you in?
I was in Tucson, Arizona. So the day I flew out, we went to the recruiter station. They had a van there that drove us to Phoenix, Sky Harbor. And then from there, we flew to Chicago International, O'Hare. And then at O'Hare, we sat and waited. And there's I still see it. Every time I fly out of there, I go and I see where I sat up in the USO area. I'm like, yep, I see it. And I can see the new guys like waiting to go. And I'm like, you'll know. You'll see. It'll be okay, though. You guys will be all right. But yeah, I see it every time I fly through there.
Awesome. So after O'Hare, where do you go?
From there, I think we got on like a bus at that point. And then they just like bused us to the military base.
Oh, so the military base is in Illinois?
Yeah. Great Lakes. Yep.
Oh, wow. America's awesome. I love how we have lakes big enough to do naval training. That is amazing.
We didn't spend any time on the water, actually, by the way. It was all on land.
Yeah, so I would... So we did not share the questions with Kyle ahead of time. He specifically wouldn't let me do that. So that's my next question. It's like, I want to know what boot camp was.
That's
like.
What I'm. Yeah. So you checked in there. Like the very first thing they do is they're assigning you to like whatever division you're going. So there's guys that are recruiting for 900 divisions. 900 divisions, the performance ones. So every graduation ceremony, there's groups that play the music instruments. There's groups that. Do flags and march with the flags, and then there's another group that does something else. I don't remember what it was, but they happened to be filling the flag cycle one. So they bring you in there, you stand at attention, they like my military form. He asked me some questions about my history, and I told him about my dad and family service, and so that was enough for them to say, yep, we want you. Added 2 weeks to my boot camp time, which kind of sucked. We have to do 3 graduation services before we get to graduate for the time that they invest in us.
Does that stick with you your entire service? Like, are you color guard? Do they call on you for other performances?
You get nothing for that. That was just some extra time. It was actually nice, though, because we didn't have to spend nearly as much time with the actual division because we had all kinds of extra duties. Then I got assigned to ship staff, too, which was even nicer.
What's ship staff?
The people who stand watch for, like, the ship. Each of our buildings were considered like their own ship, so they're treated like they were a on patrol, basically. Yeah. Wow. So you had to man night watches. People had to. You had each division had to supply people to like man the entire building, like watch stations. So I was one of those guys. And then there's other people that have to do turns in like the mess decks. You do like a week or two cleaning up after all the people eating.
So this is kind of a curiosity I have is what do you do in naval boot camp? So this is before you go for your advanced training, but give me like what a day looks like. Are you in the classroom? Are you running around?
It's actually a pretty good combination of the two. There is swim trials. There is like exercise, marching practice, a lot of marching. really just felt like it's, you're going from one place to another and you sit down in a room, you have some sort of class or filling out paperwork of some sort. Sometimes you're marching down the hallway of inoculation where there's just a line of like 300 people and they're just stabbing you on either arm as you step forward. You just, dude, the one they give you in the butt. Oh my God. I couldn't walk for a week. Felt like I had a sitting on a softball.
Yeah. So, because that is the one to the butt is the one that has like all the vaccines in it. It's
yeah, it's like they
vaccines.
Call it the peanut butter shot.
don't
if you
say
ever
that.
Were sick though, man, that thing will make you feel great.
So are you immune to everything?
No, not anymore.
Listen, I felt like crap, but I was invincible.
Actually, a lot of us got sick like immediately there because you're just around a bunch of people that are from different parts of the country. So, like the first week, 2 weeks, like it's just everyone getting over the, they call it the Ricky crud. Everything's Ricky. Ricky's recruit. So, like Ricky crud, Ricky. Yeah, just called everything that.
Now, how do I get, you know, this? Oh, we're doing an interview, so I can ask personal questions.
Yeah, you can ask whatever you want.
What does it look like from an income standpoint when you're going through basic? Like, are you getting paid at all? Like, well, I've always been curious about this.
So, my first paycheck was $5.
No, come on,
God.
Are you buying your uniform? Like, how does that work? Okay.
Every piece of whatever that I went in there that they gave me, I had to pay for.
You paid for the Fruit of the Loom underwear.
I paid for it. Yep, all of
it. Do you still have them?
I might have a couple of pairs actually still. Still have the stencil on them, my initials. let's see, what else did they? The haircut, it did not matter if you got a haircut before you went in. They still run the stupid thing over your head and charge you.
I feel
even
like
if they took no hair off, they would still charge you.
I feel like we have a military budget that should be absorbing haircuts. I feel
I think they could probably pay for our uniforms too.
Yeah, it feels like that too. It's like a weird thing to be
actually
charging somebody for.
Digging through some old stuff, so I found an old patch.
Are you going to take the tidy whities? I got really excited.
These are the patches. So this is how cost effective everything is. I was an E5, so I got two chevrons. They don't sell one with only two chevrons. You have to cut this one off, fold it, and then sew it on.
What?
Yes. So it ends up looking like
an accidental stolen valor.
So it ends up looking like that.
No, we need
I swear to God, yeah.
Somebody needs to reach out to elected officials and just pass some law that we just give them. Okay,
so. These ones for your.
Did you
those ones
buy
for your
these?
Poopy suits? Yeah, you buy everything, man. You buy everything, then you got to pay someone to sew it on, unless you want to do it yourself. Which I always did it myself because I was a cheap bastard. My sewing was terrible.
Seems fascinating to me. I still have no idea how sewing works. I think conceptually I understand it.
I just did a bunch of loops in a square and just made sure it held it in place. As long as it held it in place, nobody seemed to bother you.
So how do drill instructors work? Are they called drill instructors? Like I have this idea of like angry cops screaming at people. Even though I think that, by the way, I think that's an unfair stereotype for drill instructors. Like, they're there to make you safe. That's why I hate when they have like the fake drill instructors. It's like, no, like, I feel like drill instructors actually do like a pretty noble service. They do it. I mean, they're probably aggressive at it, which is good. But is there somebody yelling at you? Because the Navy seems so
constantly.
Different to me.
No, constantly. Yeah, they're always yelling at you. Not only they're yelling, they're constantly
funny.
Fucking with you too. Like, if you're one of the fun things to do is mess with other people in the boot camp, like you're. Rack mates or you know whatever, all your stuff goes in like a shelf behind you. It has to be like arranged in a specific way, but if you like grab like the stack of shirts and you move it over here and you swap it with the underwear, it looks right when you walk by, but the instructors would see it and they just throw all the shit on the ground. And then if they saw you, then you'd be doing push-ups while they berated you.
Okay, so this goes to kind of a weird question I have, but like, what did the living arrangement look like? Is it bunk beds?
Yep.
Is it
two rows, one row on either side of like basically like an 80-foot long room? There's about 80 bunks total, I think, in there, 80 to 100, something like that. And then we had our division was one of the first intergender, so we had girls, a girls'
really?
Birthing. That we. Half of us were in one room and the girls stayed in their own birthing and then we'd always meet together to get beat, which is what they call PT.
Okay. So that was my, I thought you meant that the women were rooming with you in the same.
No, they're not room with us that, but they did pretty much everything with us except sleep.
Really? Okay. That is fascinating. how'd the camaraderie work? Yeah. Like, so you're sleeping beside these guys, you're doing all this stuff with them. Did you feel like you built relationships really quick? Like, what is that? What did that look like?
I mean, there's some people that you kind of click with, and there's some that you just don't. I met some really good people there, also that were going to be nukes too, because as a nuke, like, they love to poach those guys for 900 divisions, so, like, they grabbed a lot of us. Which is really cool too, because then, you know, you know some people when you're going to power school, because we're all kind of riding together. When we graduated, we all got to go spend a day at I think it's the Six Flags they got up there.
Oh, that's sick.
So that, yeah, it was a blast. We had to wear our uniforms, which kind of sucked, but it was also the first time out, like, in
you dress twice.
Yeah,
you probably looked awesome. Good looking guy. You dress twice. You look great.
They look dumb.
Walk me through the last 3 days of base.
Well, hold on. I should also explain too. I had a much different experience than most people did, because I was on that ship staff, and I like to just, anybody who's going into boot camp, I would highly encourage you to volunteer for ship staff, because you are on a much different schedule than everybody else is. Because you have, like, watches at random times, you basically now have to go eat at different times from your division because you got a watch coming up. So I spent like half the time with the entire division that anybody else did. Most of it I got to spend just kind of on my own, either going to or from somewhere or on watch.
Really? So somebody's not on you all the time.
Oh, that's kind of what I imagined. Much different experience than I think a lot of people did.
You prefer that.
I love that. Yeah. Really? Yeah. Why wouldn't you want that? You want to be out there marching in the heat or the cold?
I don't like thinking.
Chicago in March sucks.
That's a valid point. Anywhere in the Great Lakes.
I got our RPOC in trouble because we're out
what
there
is
waiting.
RPOC?
It's the Black leader of the division. So they're like the recruit that they put in charge. She's the one who stands at the front and gives the marching orders and, you know, all that shit. She had us out there. We're all lined up. It's freaking snowing out there. It's cold as shit. And they should have had us get the neck warmer stuff on, or, you know, at least be able to put the scarf on or something. We didn't even have our top buttons buttoned. And so I told RPOC, I'm sitting there in the front holding a flag because I'm one of the shorter guys. So I'm in the front. I'm like, RPOC, tell everyone to button their shirts up. I mean, what are we doing here? We're just freezing our asses off. Like, oh, we'll get in trouble. It's like, they told you to take charge. Just take charge. Give an order. She gave the order. We buttoned up, and then the control instructor came out and chewed her ass out for changing the uniform. But then I didn't make us change it either. So I think that she, I think it actually worked out for her.
Oh, I have so many questions right now. Oh, I like this. Hold on a second. So they chewed her out because they were basically like, hey, you changed the uniform. Now, when you say change uniform, you literally mean you just bought the top button.
Yeah. Uniform of the day is specified, like, at the beginning of the day.
Okay.
And that is going to be based on the weather forecast, too. Like, whether or not you're going to get a coat or a scarf or or not. And we did not get one that day. It was cold.
So you have no options, essentially, in your uniform.
You have no options of anything, really. That's the whole point of boot camp, is they're just trying to break you and then teach you how to do everything their way.
Did you feel you learned a lot of skills in boot camp?
Nope.
Okay.
No, I don't think I learned much. I learned how to avoid a lot of things. I got really good at that.
Yeah, that's a skill. I've heard from other I'll say other military people, is that, you know, boot camp and basic training are about rethinking, not necessarily skill building. Like, did you fire a firearm at any point during this?
I don't know if I missed that day, or maybe I...
Can you miss a day of boot camp?
I missed a lot of days. Remember, I was on ship staff. I could have been out on watch while they're out doing that stuff.
Like, oh, this is so interesting.
I'm telling you, I missed, like, most of the drilling they did, like, of all the marching stuff. Like, I missed most of that, yeah.
Because you just walking around.
They'd get up to go eat and I'd be like, oh, I got watch in like 30 minutes. See you guys later. And then they'd be coming back from like something like, oh, in 30 minutes we're going there. I'm like, I got watch in like 30 minutes. I got to go eat now. So see you guys later.
This is so interesting.
Right, so awesome.
But do they normally, you know, do firearm training when you're, I'm trying to imagine when you're going to use a rifle on a boat.
We didn't really do a whole lot of shooting. I think for us, it was more like marching. I mean, I don't remember. There's a little bit of knot tying type stuff. Like, I don't.
Wait, they still do knot tying? I love that.
I'm trying to remember if we did do some like practice rigging. I think there's like at the last day of boot camp, like the day before you graduate, there's like basically you go to bed and then like 50 minutes later, they wake you up and then you start your trials, which is just from one casualty station to another, and you're just drill, drill, drill till the night is basically done. By the time the sun comes up, then you're about finished.
All right, so how bad have things gotten if you're using a firearm on a submarine and also having to tie knots? Like, how south have things gotten?
All right, well, if you want to get the submarine qualifications, I mean...
before we get to submarine qualifications...
Okay, all right.
you mentioned talking about, like, the last day of boot camp. So, like...
Yeah.
I'm curious about the emotional side of it. I'm really curious about the emotional side. Like, that's a really cool accomplishment. I believe only 1% of the U.S. population either is currently serving or is a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about a very rare situation, right? So you wake up. This is the last day of boot camp. So you wake up. What's that feeling like? Are you just so excited? Were you hungry? Were you tired? Or were you just like, cool, I just accomplished this thing that my father went through, my grandfather went through, and now I'm about to move on to become an expert in something? Like, what does that feel like?
It's tough because the actual last day of boot camp, like, it's hard to pinpoint that because there wasn't really a last day. Remember, like, we had to do 3 separate graduations. Yeah. So we had to perform for 2 graduations and our own. I'm trying to remember if ours was, because we had to stay for like an extra... like week or two after everybody else had like moved on. So I think we had graduated at that point. I'm trying to remember. I think there was like a week where we're just kind of like there, like waiting for our flights to go to the next thing.
Final test. Like, do you have a crucible like in the Marine Corps or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. That gauntlet of like drills that they run you through like that last night.
What are some of the drills? Is that ship staff?
No, I went to these ones. It was kind of a blitz. I don't really remember a whole lot of it. I remember like standing on like the deck of like a ship, and I think we're trying to tie it off, and I can't remember if it might have had some hydraulics, so it rocked. Some of the really cool drill stuff though I didn't do until I got to the fleet, and we can talk about those later.
So boot camp's over.
Make a note of the flooding. That's the coolest one.
That sounds terrifying. So you finished boot camp, right?
Yeah.
So you said you waited a little bit. And I do apologize if I call it color guard, but you did your ceremonial duties.
Yeah.
So now you're waiting. Like, is this similar? So before we move on to the part, what was your MOS?
Electrician's mate, nuke power.
Like how casual you said that.
I never know how to say it. It's like EMN. It's an electrician's
idea.
Mate, but it's like also nuke qualified. So. Yeah,
that's so cool to me.
And when you say, when you mentioned electrician, yeah, this is different than like the guy who pulls wires. Like there is not a whole lot of wire pulling on a submarine. It's mostly a lot of like maintenance on like motor generator sets and like an electronic technician, I would say.
Yeah, I just assume it's the fundamental understanding you have about electricity that I think
I did not fully grasp what electricity was until after I got out.
We still don't know how tape works. In fact, there's still an active debate on how lightning rods work.
Yeah, because the feelers.
Yep, they're like, is it channeling the energy, or is it ionizing anions into the air, which is reducing the likelihood of lightning strike in anywhere besides where it is? Yeah, no,
that's wild.
I read an article a couple of days ago on this. I actually did want to say
something about boot camp, because you mentioned about like the feelings, and I think you asked about like the what it was like going through it, the skills you learned.
Yeah.
And there was a skill that I learned, I think. And it was just more like knowing what you can get, like what you can push through. I think that was more like the feeling of accomplishment. Like I just went through 9 months of just pure terror and I'm still here. And that does feel pretty cool.
Cause you're 19. You're a kid.
Yeah.
You're a kid right now.
Yeah. I also gained about 30 pounds. I also want to say, cause I wasn't eating a square. I was not eating 3 meals a day when I went in. I was living on my own, dude. I was eating from the Walmart deli because I didn't have enough food to buy or enough money to buy food to feed me properly. So by the time I went in, I was 130 pounds.
Oh,
by the time I got to like the boat, I think I weighed 170.
Underweight to like normal weight.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, wow. How was the food in basic or boot? Sorry.
There's enough to choose from. Like it wasn't, it's just like a cafeteria. Like imagine going to like Luby's.
I don't know what that is.
Perkins, maybe?
I don't know what a Is Perkins like the breakfast restaurant?
Just like a buffet, like a typical buffet that you go to. It's like buffet food.
I was going to say Golden Corral?
Yeah, maybe something like that. Maybe like not as fancy.
Not as fancy as Golden Corral.
Yeah, the eggs are probably powdered.
Oh, that's okay. So this is it. Okay, interesting, because actually I have a lot of food related questions.
Yeah,
for this, because I've heard that submarine food is supposed to be like the best food in the service, and based on your stories, that does not seem to be true.
No, we got some good meals, and I would say probably on the whole, the meals were probably better than what the average person got. But I never saw what they ate on a carrier, so all I can tell you is like compared to what I eat now, no, that was garbage. But we also did some really cool things, like on halfway nights, we'd get like...
What's a halfway night?
It's the halfway of your patrol. So the night when you're almost done, you're halfway finished. Usually have like a bunch of celebrations, a bunch of games that we play.
Don't worry. I have questions about that. That was very up my list.
The food, though, on those nights, like we usually get like steak, lobster, king crab legs, like all you can eat at night, one night.
Is it weird? I find it funny when people underwater eating like crabs and lobster. I don't know why. I've like in my head, I'm like, are they like grabbing the crab? Like,
I tried to bring my deep sea rod with me one patrol to see if they'd let me try to catch food for the boat, and they wouldn't let me.
That is funny. So you finish boot, and how much time between boot and when you go to your specialty school? Did you get to have leave, or how did that work?
It was only like a couple days. I remember grandpa, my mom, and like a bunch of people came up for the graduation, which was actually, that was really cool now that I think about it. My grandpa, he rode his motorcycle up from Houston, Texas, all the way up to Chicago.
So cool. That is the coolest sentence I've ever heard in my life.
That is really neat to have him there. I mean, that was a special moment for me. Yeah. Yep. The Marine Corps.
He probably loved that.
And it was amazing for me, too, because he told me so many amazing stories, too. Sad he passed, but I got his picture up there right now looking at me.
I got to ask.
Yeah?
Did he give you a little crap? It's a Marine and a Navy guy? Did he give you a little?
He actually never really did, but I don't think he really considered himself. He was only a Marine for 2 years. He actually managed to do the short-term enlistment. I tried. They suckered me for another 2 years on top of what I was doing.
Yeah, that was the opposite. You paid your grandfather's extra 2 years. Yeah, exactly. The Navy will get its due.
We averaged four.
That's amazing.
That's funny. When I signed up initially, I asked him. They tried to sell me on that nuke program. It wasn't until they tripled my bonus that I agreed to it. But I went from like 4,000 to 12,000 just for joining, but it added an extra 2 years to my contract. And I was like, dude, I'm trying to go backwards, man. You got anything that's 2 years?
If you're eating Walmart deli food and your $12,000 sounds, did you get that immediately? Like, how does that work? Did they just hand you a check after you
No, it's not until you finish, and it's usually paid in installments too.
NFL signing bonus. That's
yeah. Like if you do the reenlistment bonus, like you get like half of it up front, and then every year you get the rest of it paid out over the reenlistment period. I think for the signing one though, it wasn't until once we finished our MOS. That's probably like once you went to your first command. That's probably around the time when they paid out most of that.
Oh, that's okay. I think that's something that especially kids listening would be very curious about.
Yeah, I should probably dig that up and see if I can probably figure it out by looking at old pay stubs if I can find them.
You're like, oh, they chipped me. Realize how much money I would have made on that?
No. The Navy gave me a lot more than I put in, I think. That's the other advice I'll give people is befriend the cooks and the yeomen, because the yeomen are in charge of your leave and the cooks are the ones that feed you. And
how does that so you didn't have a leave in between your specialty school?
Yeah, it was only like a couple days because like we're basically graduate. Had that one day at like Six Flags. It was good that we didn't spend a whole lot of time there. I would not want to have been stuck in boot camp for like an extra week longer than I had to have been. Yeah. Some people were there for a long time. But yeah, it was like less than a week, I think, before we were shipped out to our next station, which for us was Goose Creek, South Carolina for Naval Power School, A School.
So break that sequence of words there. Okay. I get the Naval.
Yep. So this is basically where they teach you everything about being an electrician. This is the first 6 months is going to be all electrical type theory for our rating. If you're a mechanic, you're going to like mechanical theory type stuff. If you're an electrician, technician, ET, then you'll probably get a lot more like Boolean logic and like more that kind of stuff. Then after that 6 months is done, then you go to the next one, which is your power school, which is going to teach you everything that they want you to know about how a nuclear reactor works. I showed you my book just a little bit ago. I think you can see the book. That's my study book. I still have it.
So, dumb question here. Are you in the same group with people who are maybe going on nuclear-powered aircraft carriers?
At this point, nobody knows yet. Nobody. The only thing we are different is that the enlisted and officers are separated at this point. Okay. Every officer is going through nuke program. And I think every officer also gets qualified submarine, too.
That's amazing. So
that's something worth knowing if you're wanting to be an officer.
That is absolutely... Oh, wow. Our military is awesome. Drill instructors, are you getting yelled at this school?
It's less so, but yes, you are still. Okay. Basically, until you get your fish, which... That's your fish.
Ah, look at that.
Oh, can't really see it there. It's your warfare insignia. So for submariners, it's the dolphins, which are these ones. Air warfare or the surface warfare for the guys on the carriers. But until you get that qualification, you're basically nub. They call you a non-useful body. You are beyond useless to them. And they'll treat you like that until you basically get out to the fleet.
What do they call it? I think what do the Army and the Marine call Pogue? Like position other than grunt or something like that?
We call it nub here.
I find it funny that every one of the branches, you know, has this very unique identity. I mean, obviously the U.S. Navy is an illustrious history. I mean, it's, you know, it's founded in the 1700s.
Like, I know, right? Yeah, they remind you, too.
Pirates. How is the tradition? Like, are they just beating into your head the amazing tradition of the U.S. Navy? Like, is that an important message there? Like, about your history.
There is a lot of that in, like, boot camp more so than anywhere else, I would say. Okay. But I mean, that's something like a good commander will do. Like every now and then he'll just bust out like from his book of quotes, like just something famous that some admiral said somewhere and just motivate everybody for a day. Like
I've only yet begun to fight is like, that's a Navy quote. That's amazing.
Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
Yeah. I mean, it really is when you think of the history of the U.S. Navy, and obviously I'm very biased being from, you know, the place where the guy who created the U.S. Navy is from, working John Adams. but no, it's kind of, so you're in A school. Is that the correct term? So you're in A school. I mean, that's so much information. You're learning a bachelor's degree in 6 months. So like, how does this work?
So the best way I heard it described was it's like trying to put out a fire by drinking from a fire hose and peeing on it.
Really?
Like that? They don't care if you understand anything. They don't care if you grasp the concepts. All they care about is, can you say it in the way that I have written it? Like, can you memorize this fact? If you see me ask this question, can you spit out these tricky words that I want you to remember? And if you can do that, that's basically all you have to do. That's what makes it so difficult, though, because I think a lot of people don't actually learn the concepts while they're there.
Yeah, because this is interesting to me because you're very, very smart. And I see you not as you're a concept guy. I don't see you as this rote memorization guy.
Oh, no. I was amazing at that. I did not study at all through my entire career. Maybe a little bit. I shouldn't say. An important test, I'd maybe study for a few hours for that, but... Like everybody who goes through power school, A school, there's going to get mandatory study hours based on their GPA. So unless you're pulling like a 3.6 average, which is like an A, you're going to get at least 10 study hours a week, up to 50 for some of these guys.
What are study hours?
That's time that you have to come in outside of school in order to log time that you're studying because you were not doing well enough in school. So obviously you need to study more. And then school is going from 7 to 4, Monday through Friday. So you're already doing 9 hours of just straight lesson. And basically, like you come in, you're writing. You just start writing, and that's pretty much your day.
Is there a library? Where are people checking into?
Just a room that we have that we're staying in. No, there's no library. We're just in the same room for 6 months.
Who's teaching the courses? Do you have like? Are you bringing in people? Is it military guys? Is it industry experts?
And that's kind of what I wanted, like. kind of what set the genesis for like wanting to do something like this was the fun aspect of in a school and power school. Like one of the best days that we had, or the best days we have, would be like when they'd say, okay, we've learned enough for today. Let's give you guys a break. I'm going to tell a sea story. And like one of the salty instructors from there would tell like a story of like some port call they had in Thailand, or, you know, something from the fleet, just to like encourage, like just to give you something to look forward to. Like, ah, oh, man, yeah, it'd be so nice once we get to the fleet.
By the way, no, that's a good, another question I have, which is, you know, are you chomping at the bits to get through this? Is this something you're just viewing, not just maybe you, Kyle, but generally speaking, are you just like, I got to get through this because I want to be on a ship?
So the whole time you're in the pipeline, I was just talking to Laura about this too. Is this, I hated hearing this by the time I got to the boat, but just everyone tells you it's better, gets better. Get through boot camp, it gets better. Get to power school, it gets better. Get to prototype, it gets better. It doesn't get better. It never gets better. It gets different.
It's different. Yeah. What do you mean? Oh, you can't just lead us on with that. What do you mean by that?
The way I try to explain it, boot camp, you are not responsible for anything. You don't have to think. All you have to do is just go where they say and do what they say, and you'll be fine. Now you get to A school, and now you have to think, and that's all you have to do is think. And you got to do a lot of thinking. I mean, you're going to school 7 to 4 every day. And then on top of that, you got your hours that you got to put in. Some of these guys are seriously doing 50 extra hours a week on top of 7 to 4. So they're there basically 7 till 10 every day, because that's the latest they'll let them stay there. And then they're there 12 hours on Saturday and Sunday. So that's it getting better, apparently. And then you get the prototype, and then it's no more sitting around and learning. Now you got to go actually like run the thing, but learn it without anybody like teaching you. Now you have to learn it on your own.
So what's prototype?
Prototype is like a fully functional reactor with like watch stations. Like you'd been, I got lucky that it was an SHG prototype. So it was the same model as my submarine ended up using that they sent me to. So I basically qualified a prototype on the same system that I went to out to the sea.
When you say, is it fueled? Is the reactor fueled?
Yeah, it's a fully functional reactor plant. Yeah.
Wait, so we just have like nuclear reactors sitting in South Carolina that we're trained. We are, oh my word, everything I learned about the U.S. military, I'm just like, we're the best.
South Carolina. The one I went to is in Boston Spa, New York.
Oh, so when did you move from Carolina up, South Carolina up to New York? When did this
happen? That would have been after A school, power school. So after a year of South Carolina, then I went up to New York for 6 months. And then my prototype there. And then from there, you go to your command. And at prototype two, that's where they split you off. And they, if you're going to volunteer to join the sub force, that's where they find you.
Okay. So this is a great segue, Kyle. So I wanted to know, how do you end up on a submarine? Like, when does that happen?
It's in a little classroom. They bring some guy in there who's probably a submariner, so he can like tell you about the benefits of it and maybe answer any questions that people have. The main benefit is that your sea pay and sub pay, there's two different pays. So if you're out, like on a surface ship, like a carrier or a tender or something, you're getting sea pay for that. If you're on a submarine, you're getting sea pay and sub pay. And as an added bonus, if you sign up for submariner service, they'll start counting your time at prototype as time for your sea pay and sub pay. So that increases like the more time you spend out at sea. So by the time I left the service, after about 4 years on a boat, I think I checked in at like 04, got out in 08, I was probably making about $580 extra a month just on sea pay, sub pay. And that's basically tax free too.
Yeah. And, you know, that's $500 extra in before the great financial recession. I mean, that is
a little more than half of that was just from sub pay.
Wow. Okay. So you're sitting in the classroom, and some guy starts telling you about these wacky things that go under the water and run on hot rocks and can end the world. Run on hot rocks and fire hot rocks that can end the world. So, like, what were you like? Yeah. This sounds like what I want to do. I want to.
I think it was more that you had two options, right? You had, if you're a nuke, you're going to go where there's going to be a reactor plant for you to operate, right? So that's either going to be a submarine or it's going to be a carrier.
Carrier sounds awesome. Why not the carrier?
There's 5,000 freaking people. They have roving gangs on carriers.
Roving gangs.
They really do have gangs on. There's gang violence on carriers, for real.
This is one of the hottest takes I've ever heard in my life.
I wanted the camaraderie, I think. I'm more of an introverted person by nature. I think you kind of know that from getting to know me. Like, It's not my personality to be around that many people. Boot camp was too many people for me.
So you were underwater with nuclear reactors was better than like potentially having to hang out with 5,000 people. Well, I'm with you. I'm actually 100% with you on that. All right, you can sell me.
You can go your entire like career on a surface ship and not know, you know, a good chunk of the people that you're serving with. On a submarine, I know every single person that serves on that boat. Like you have a relationship with all them. It's much different. It's like a brotherhood almost, right?
Yeah. No. Did you have to go through any special testing and stuff to be on a submarine? Maybe not even just your mechanical skills, but is there a psychological requirement? I mean, it is such a bizarre...
It probably was, but I really don't remember, to be honest with you. There had to have been some kind of screening.
Right, though. I don't think they just let you, like, hey, go on a submarine. So you decide to be a submariner, all right? You're entering the silent service. What happened? Like, do you get a chance to like look at a submarine, get on it? Like, I think the average person has no idea what a submarine is.
I mean, again, I was kind of lucky that I was on an SHG plant. So I basically was in an engine room of like what a sub would look like for the most part. Like I had a pretty good understanding of like what I would be doing on a sub.
Is this where you did the flooding training?
No, that would have been actually that was a specific like, machine that they had like built like a room like for in a training station like in the center in a building somewhere offshore that was amazing.
Wait, so what
is a giant room that just had walls of pipes different diameters, and every single one of them basically had leaks. And what they do is they send you in like a team of like 10 or 20 of you, and they arm you with as many like soft patch, hard patch, like everything you can use to like repair leaking pipes in this room, and then you basically have until it gets above your head, and they let you just go.
Above your head?
Oh yeah, you're never gonna actually shut everything out. There's so many leaks on there, and there's.
How did you feel during this?
Oh, it's amazing, dude. It's fun. Like, we're hanging off of stuff. Like some of us are trying to go under. They won't let you go underwater, but like we're like, come on, I can get this one. Let me get this one.
You just having a ball.
Oh, dude, it was awesome.
Was that the mental test? They're like, oh, this guy's loving this.
No, see, this was already like, I already been qualified. This was just like, oh, this is fun. We're just going to go out there to have fun.
When you say I've already been qualified, what does qualified mean there? Because you've already been in school for 18 months of this.
Yeah. Sub qualified. So until you get your submariner qualification, until you get your fish, you are not qualified to do anything as far as. If there's a fire, if there's anything that's going on the boat, you can't help because you don't know the systems. You've not been trained. Nobody thinks you have the knowledge to like know where to shut off a valve if you need to save everyone's life. Like they can't rely on me because I can't pull my weight now. That's the way they look at it.
Wait, are you on the submarine while you're waiting to be submarine qualified?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm standing under instruction watches. Yeah. So I get to the boat in October of 2004, I think it was. We're in refit assist at that point, which was really lucky because that means that we're helping the next crew turn the boat around so they can go out. Like our crew had just gotten back. That did kind of suck because it's hard to learn the boat systems when the boat isn't there and they don't stop.
Understandable.
They don't stop tracking like your progress. Like they want you to make so many points a week in order to get your qualification by the time the first patrol ends. If you can get qualified before the first patrol, that's like Admiral's letter, like they want to give you something to celebrate. That's the goal. That's what we're all shooting for. So like 2 months while the other boat's out there, I'm just like falling behind on quals. And there's nothing you can do about it. Like everybody knows it, but at the same time, like you're still getting yelled at by people because you're not meeting your metrics. I'm like, okay, nobody's going to sign my checkout on the battery because I can't go to the fucking battery to prove that I know anything about it. If I can't show them where the goddamn battery is on a sub, they're not going to get. Yeah. Anyway. So patrol, the boat comes back. We do our refit now. So we're getting the boat ready for us to go out.
Is refit when they resupply it? Is that like what's
it's going when on we do all the import maintenance, like getting everything like ready to go out to sea. If you're going to be a nuke mechanic, this is like when you're going to be the busiest, out to sea, like they're probably the least busy, but they're doing most of their work while we're in port because that's the only time you really shut down a lot of their systems. As for like us electricians, like we're busy both times. Like we're humping it during refit, we're humping it out to sea. It sucks. Like that's the worst one to be an ET or be a mechanic. Don't be an electrician if you have a choice.
So, this might go a little further ahead, but one thing I was curious about is, like, what did the, maybe we can split this question in two parts. So before you're sub-qualified, what did the average day on the sub look like?
So it would be, well, let's just start with, like, what the day, the days are broken up into 18-hour days. So we'll start with that.
To me, by the way, yeah. That just seems like horrible, so, but
6 hours of watch, 6 hours maintenance or other stuff that you're doing. Sometimes, you got like trainings or other things planned during that. And then you get 6 hours for sleeping. If you are not qualified, then you're going to be using a lot of that time for getting qualified.
So what do you mean by getting qualified? Are you pointing at the battery saying, this is the thing I told you I needed to look at?
I'm going to anybody who's qualified to sign. So once somebody's like, been on the sub long enough, they'll get assigned like the systems that they can, that they're going to learn to the point where they can question somebody else on. And we feel comfortable that their signature means that they know that system. So you're basically just going around to all these different people and trying to explain whatever their system of expertise is, drawing schematics, explaining how it works, like what the system's ratings are, how to shut it down, like all that stuff you're doing until they're satisfied that you know it. And if a guy doesn't like you, like, it doesn't matter how much you know, like they'll fail you if they want to fail you. It's like... That's basically the entire nuke life. Like, if they want you to fail a board or an exam, you will fail it. There's not a board you can pass if they don't want you to pass it.
All right, so this kind of follow up question on the side: are you interacting with enlisted? Are these NCOs? Are these officers? Yeah. Is it?
So you're interacting with everybody on the sub. Like, there's not a whole lot of differentiation between rank.
The reason I ask this is because you're a very egalitarian person. Like, you don't.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about you, buddy, is that you don't care about titles or anything like that. Was that attractive to the staff service?
Yes. That was... We pulled into Pearl Harbor one year, and we were forming a trash line to get all the trash off our sub. We had enlisted, we had officers, we had chiefs. Like, everybody was in line humping the stuff off, right? There's a carrier next to us, and they actually sent like their chief of the boat down to go yell at our chief of the boat about having enlisted NCOs and officers working with the enlisted men where their guys can see it. And our cop told him to fuck off.
You realize how many nuclear weapons I have on this
thing? He's like, you can go fucking eat a dick, dude. We got work to do.
I'm the boss of the sea. Yes.
This is my boat. So you know what he did is he ended up taking all his crew off from up topside and made them all go down below decks until we were done. Yeah, so that's the mindset of like the surface fleet. That's why I didn't want to go out there. So,
when did you become qualified?
Okay, so there's probably like a month into the run before I like really started to take it seriously. That's when I realized like, shit, if I want to get qualified, I got to like make this happen. So that was the point where like you're standing, you're under instruction watches. Let's also remember too, you got like drills happening Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You've got training on Mondays. You got field days on Fridays. So you may have like a 16-hour or 18-hour rotation like that. If your off time falls during those drills, like, too bad, you don't get to sleep. If your off time falls during that training, like, too bad, you don't get to sleep. If your off time falls during that field day, too bad, you don't get to sleep. So you're missing a lot of sleep pretty much the entire time you're out to sea. So about a month into it, that's when I started taking it seriously. At this point, I'm getting maybe 2 hours of sleep at every 24. And I did this for pretty much the rest of the patrol to get to the point where they're ready to give me my board. I actually missed a under instruction watch. I thought I was going to be in so much trouble. I slept through it. And my C-dad, what they call the guy who's in charge, like I went and found him afterwards. Like, oh, dude, I'm so sorry, man. I'll make it up to you, whatever you need. Like, I don't want to be like, I don't want you to think of me like that. It's like, dude, you've been like busting your ass. It's cool, man. Get some sleep. Like, you look like you needed it.
What is seawall? Like, what do you?
What?
You're underwater, right? Like, at this point, you're. The sub stays underwater pretty much the whole duration, correct?
Pretty much. I mean, we'll surface for like to run the diesel to suck in some fresh air. So we can change out the, recycled farts that we've been breathing for a month.
So what's watch?
It's just whatever you're... So like the first watch you're going to stand as an electrician is going to be the auxiliary aft watch. He's just the guy who walks around. He's the roving electrician. You're got a log sheet that you're just walking around different pieces of equipment, writing down everything every hour on your rounds. The AEA would also be in charge of making coffee for everybody else. He's also the guy who's in charge of waking up the next shift's rotation or next shift's watches. So you're going down, like waking everybody up like 15 minutes till. But it's like the most junior watch. It's the easiest one. Once you qualify from there, you'll go to Throttleman. He's the one who controls the steam to the propulsion train, which is also really, if you want to know who's in charge of the reactor plant, it's the guy in control of the steam demand.
Yeah, that feels like the most important part of how reactors work.
Yeah. If you want that thing to go up, he'll just turn that, he'll open that valve up and power will go up. Nothing the reactor operator do about it. And then from Throttleman, then you go to electrical plant operator, and then you have your shutdown watches. So shutdown reactor operator and shutdown electrical operator. And shutdown reactor operator is the highest qual that we get for electricians. Although you can go up to like engine room supervisor, engine watch supervisor. I never went for those. I went for night baker because that was more my speed.
Is this all, are these all NCOs, all enlisted? Is there a mix
pretty
of both,
much like- If you make it through A school and power school, you're going to be an E4 just going in as a nuke. Like you start out as an E3, and then once you basically get to A school, you're an E4. So we're all NCOs pretty much on a sub. There's very few E3s or less. Usually they got in trouble if they did.
Now, I actually, one of my questions I had prepared for this.
I don't want to skip over the qualifications and stuff, because that's like one of the coolest things our sub did, and it was unique in that we actually had like mock drills that we'd run on our sub to prove that you could actually like fight a fire. Like we'd have like casualties set up. I actually had to like crawl into a bilge and put a hard patch onto like a fire wow. 2-inch water line that was pumping out Pacific water. Dude, that 50 degrees that water was. I was just sitting
so
swimming in.
They're actually flooding
above. Yeah, and I'm in there patching it up as best I can.
Why does anybody pick fights with us?
Right? Then after you finish your whole drill, you got to do a nifty walkthrough, which is like a little...
It's a nifty walkthrough.
It's a thermal imaging cam. Like you have to wear that, an EAB, which is like an emergency air breathing apparatus. It looks like the SUBA gear that like firefighters get, except the older version, because it had a canister instead of a can of air. It was like a chemical reaction. So you go around with that. You have to find like missing people in the engine room and like save them, quote unquote. Like it's this a whole like 6-hour like drill set that you did. And then after the drill set, when you're soaking wet after you finish, you know, patching that stupid water leak, then you got to go stand and do an oral evaluation in front of like the captain and a bunch of other officers. And when I did mine, they asked me if I wanted anything to drink. The cop comes up. He's like, yeah, okay, so you're gonna have your board here. Like, we'll get you some water. You want some hot water, some cocoa, some coffee or something? Because, you know, that water's really fucking cold, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'll take some water, though. Hot water? I was like, no, just a little bit of ice. I drank ice water in front of him while I did my board.
I think the average person would think it's nerve-wracking to be underwater for that duration. Did you ever feel that? Did you find it very natural, or did you just get over it?
I mean, you just kind of have to not really think about it too much, I think.
What was the first day like? What was that first day where that hatch shuts and you're like, wow, I am on a nuclear-powered submarine under the water cruising through the Atlantic or, in your case, the Pacific? Like,
I don't really remember a whole lot of that first patrol, to be honest
with you. That's not like etched in your brain? That doesn't freak you out? Oh,
the
wow.
The first refit was like I think that was like the real moments. It was because that was the first time I met most of the people. It was the time when you're like trying to like impress everyone.
Yeah. So
I think that stood out more to me than the actual monotony of a patrol, because the patrol is just, it's the same day over and over. It's, you want to talk about Groundhog's Day, I mean, that's it. Man, like you literally, you're trying to go to the bed as soon as you can so you can fast forward.
I do have a question on the sleeping arrangements. Now, I don't know if this is true, but I did, you know, during some of my research, I could have misunderstood this. You hut bunk, right? Like you share a bed
with
somebody?
Some people did. I had to my first patrol until I was more qualified.
Is it weird sharing a bed with somebody?
I mean, it depends. Whatever it sucks is because, you know, that's like I told you, we're 12, like six on, six, and then six.
Yeah.
Well, there's like 6 hours of overlap there. Like, who gets the bed then?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
So real quick, that 6, 6, and 6. So it's six sleep, 6 watch. And then what's the other 6?
Like maintenance and other stuff. Like,
okay, so
usually it's maintenance. So we had, so we go stand our watch, get off, go eat, come back to the engine room, and then we'd either have like cleaning field day. Like usually there's after watch cleanup that you do, and then there's going to be whatever the maintenance of the day is. So if we had like a motor generator set we had to take down, like that could be a 12-hour maintenance. So you're like talking crew changes. Could be lucky and you just got like a nav motor set or some like trim up pump that you have to go, that takes like an hour or two. And then you got the rest of your 4 hours of that to go play cards or watch movies or whatever.
So that's exactly what I was trying to ask.
You're not always using all that time up.
I was trying to figure, because I know one of the, you know, it's funny when I was doing, you know, I was, again, when I was very excited to sit down and talk to you about this, you know, some of the stuff I looked at is, you know, where do people exercise? And it was funny seeing like exercise equipment that's essentially in a closet, but cards
was on the very
stuff.
Bottom. We had a punching bag. That's what I mostly used. And we had like an elliptical set and some weights.
Yeah. There's not a weight room, right? Like it's
no, there's not many rooms to begin with.
are you jealous that the Typhoon class of the Russian fleet had a steam bath in it?
No.
So you get steam bath, but also you have to go in a Russian submarine.
Yes, our subs work. We have a much better surface to dive ratio than Russian subs.
You were enlisted. You were in the service when the Kursk happened, I believe.
Was that
2003?
2003. I would have been in school then. Yeah, that might have happened. I think because I remember watching like the second Gulf War invasion happen while I was in Power School.
Oh no, I'm sorry. It happened in 2000. Oh my god, there's been so many Russian submarine accidents. Oh wow. Yeah. Okay, never mind. We're not going to open that can of worms.
How many Navy ones have there been? I think two that I can think of.
Yeah, one very, like, very stretched out over time too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's the interesting part of the United States. We're considered two generations ahead of other nations our submarine technology.
Oh yeah,
That brings me to a question that you have alluded to in the past in our conversations that I really want to get. You got to fire ICBMs.
Yes, 3 of them.
What was that like?
So it's just a test fire. Obviously, there's no nukes on it, obviously. But
no, we're aware. Everybody is aware of that. It's currently not irradiated pieces of the world. But you fired ICBM. Like, that's got to be – what did that feel like?
It felt like the entire boat was falling, like shaking itself apart. It was – one of the craziest things I think I ever experienced.
Were you underwater when it happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're at periscope depth, I think. So, like, 70, 90 feet, something like that underwater.
It's funny when you think of a periscope. You don't think of a periscope being a 7-story building.
I know, right?
You think of it being like when you're a little kid and you draw the little, like, hook finger. Yeah. And you're like, oh, my God, this is massive.
Also, speaking of which, too, that periscope, popping that periscope up and looking at the sky in the middle of the Pacific, in the middle of the night. You get some of the coolest shots of the sky you've ever seen. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Did you get to see the images from the periscope? Like, how does that
work? I went and looked through it.
Wait, you're allowed to look through? I thought that was like only like an office. Like,
I mean, you ask nicely, they'll let you.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
Just ask nicely. That's why you don't be a dick to everyone. I mean, if you're cool and you make friends with everybody, it's a much better experience, right?
I feel like that's a very natural, like, human emotion, just being like, what is up? Wicked cool.
Right? Yeah. <It's> like,
zero light pollution.
Dude, everybody's excited to talk about like the thing that they're experts on.
You're right.
If you get there and just, I don't know. I don't think I really tapped into that as much until I got older, but I wish I would have understood that a little bit better as a younger age.
So you're doing these, and again, Kyle, obviously, if you can't talk about it, I get it, but what was that day like when you're launching it?
So we're basically all at battle stations, right? Because we don't really know what's going to happen.
What is a battle station for you? What does that look like?
My station was the emergency propulsion motor. So it's the, if something happened to like the shaft or the reduction gears or any of like the steam train system upstream, if we couldn't turn the shaft anymore, we can use battery power to spin the shaft through the emergency propulsion system. So I would be there to transfer, to basically switch the linkages and transfer power to it in order to keep the boat moving. So here's the thing about, like, you think about a submarine underwater is basically like a plane flying in the air. If it's not moving, it's falling. It's sinking. So that was my position. I think I fell asleep waiting for it to happen, which probably shouldn't have happened. But you're on the very end of the boat. Like, most people don't really pay too much attention to you over there. The first one went off and it was just kind of like a little bit of shaking, but they launched them from like the front to the back. So the first one went off and it was like nothing. I barely even felt it. Second one went off and it was like, damn, that was kind of neat. It's like, what's this next one going to be like? Next one was like in our compartment and it was, like, Jesus Christ. And then we were told it like basically landed, and like if you were aiming at like a 50 gallon barrel drum, like we would have basically like stuck it right in the center of that. Like that's how freaking accurate how far are.
Yeah, I was gonna say, do they know how far it traveled? Or, I mean, they know.
I don't know where we were when we shot it off, but I think it was a test range somewhere in California. So there's a minimum range we have too. So it had to have been at least probably like 1,000, I would guess.
That is absolutely. It's funny. Kyle and I were recording this a few weeks after the U.S. Bombing strike in Iran. Mm. And what's interesting about that is, one, the accuracy. I mean, the GBU-57. I mean, you've ever seen those? The test video is always crazy because they're hitting a telephone pole with a 30,000 pound missile. But in particular, one of the things that actually launched a considerable amount of ordnance was an attack submarine.
Yeah.
That was, I think I might have messed up that nomenclature, because an attack submarine hunts boats, I believe.
Right. They're
converted Ohio class, correct?
To fire this was an SSGN that, yeah, they took some of their ICBM silos out and basically just converted them, I think, to launch Tomahawks. Yeah. What's really interesting about that is the refit time on that apparently is pretty insane. Like, it takes a long time to reload all those missiles onto that thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's currently considered one of the constraining factors of the U.S. Navy, is that we have all these what are effectively missile frigates with these VLSs, vertical launch systems, and we would have to actually go like all the way back to Guam or Hawaii to refit them. So we're actually currently developing technology to refit them while they're underway.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which would be super cool to be able to see.
But super dangerous.
Now, Kyle, when you served, were you riding around the world laced with nuclear weapons? Is that, you weren't using, you didn't have Tomahawks or anything? Like, you were?
No, we had nothing else. But
so if you're asleep and you wake up and you feel like, blah, 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 and you're in the ocean, like, something's happening. Like, you're writing history. So
luckily, that didn't happen until, I think, like, our last, second to last patrol, maybe. It might have been the last one. I cannot remember. Because I know we took all the missiles out when we did our transit around through Panama to go to Norfolk to do our refuel. So I had to have been between that. But, I cannot remember if that was the last patrol or second to last patrol. But, yeah, luckily that happened later in the career, because I could have been claimed ignorance, I think, before that. Just like, what the hell was that? And also, to be honest, like, there's... What I was told when I was going through school is that if we ever launched one of those missiles, there'd basically be another missile coming at us. It would vaporize a square mile of ocean. So if we launched, then we're done too. So just kind of, yeah.
And you're just like, oh, well, at least I'll know it's coming.
At least it'll be quick.
Oh, Kyle. How many patrols did you do?
I did 5. I did 4 strategic deterrence patrols, and then the one that was the fun patrol that we got to do, where we got to get all our
fun patrol.
I think our captain was just looking out for us, because we were basically just, all we had to do was go from Washington to Virginia, but we got to stop in San Diego. We got to do like a bunch of Tiger cruises, so people got to bring their parents on to come like ride with us for a couple days. We did like a whole week of midshipman runs.
Midshipman run.
So the people who go like in school, college, like to be officers, like they get to come on and like spend a couple days with us. It's part of their training.
Did you go? No, I know there's a controversy, and I imagine it's with submarines, where a lot of nations don't want boomer subs.
Did not get to go anywhere but Hawaii and San Diego and Port Canaveral, Florida. I traversed the Panama Canal. I still have my Panama water in that box there. Awesome. I got to wave at Dominican Republic. I think I got to wave at that one. But no, we didn't get to go to any foreign parts. That was the one thing I was like the most sad about, is I didn't get to like really see the world. It was Hawaii and the Pacific Ocean.
Right. Because you can't it defeats the purpose. You docking somewhere.
It's sad because it's the safest place to be. We can't nuke ourselves.
Yeah, right. This is exactly where you want to be.
Allegedly.
It's like being being in the inside of a boxer with long arms.
Right.
You're like, oh, this is the safest spot right now. It's touching the sky. So this is so fascinating to me. Now, you say strategic patrols.
Yeah.
So are you covering thousands and thousands of miles over the course? I mean, because how long is a patrol? So 90 days, 180 days?
We never really got too much past 90. It was usually like between 70 to 80 and change. Depending, you always got extended too. That always sucked.
I hear that term a lot in the news now. They talk about what's going on in the Middle East, about normally, extending aircraft carriers. What does it mean for a submarine?
For a submarine, it's usually a replacement boat because our whole point is to have coverage, right? It's just nobody knows where our sub is. That's what makes them scary. That's what keeps people from acting up. Well, if our replacement's not ready to come out because something happened, then we have to stay out until they are ready to come out. And that if your captain likes to be home, then you might get to, I guess, have an extended refit at the expense of the poor guys who are out to sea.
Oh,
yeah. So anytime somebody was basically saying like, oh, we can't be ready, is they're fucking us. That's the way we looked at it.
Yeah.
And it was always the worst too, because like, you know, those the missile tubes, the compartment. I don't know if you got to see the video I showed you. So you can see like the missile compartments along the ways. We put up like pictures of like calendar girls on the tubes, like as we approach the days. Like this is the countdown days. They call them tube days. So, like, the last 24 days, you put up a picture. It's like, oh, yeah, we're getting closer. The worst was when you had to take them down. Seven down. Oh, man, take them down.
Now, what did you do when a patrol ended? Like, did you get time off? Did you go somewhere? Like, what did
that look
like?
So, as soon as you get back, that's when you go into refit assist, which is what I basically stepped into when I got to my first command. That's where you're just helping the other crew, but because you just came off a patrol, they don't really expect you to do much. You're basically there for a couple hours in the morning. When I was in, this has probably changed, by the way, but you'd spend a couple hours working with on some little project that they want just to help out the next group, and then you go home. And then once they're gone, then you're just in an office for a couple months waiting, doing training, continuous training. That's why you do some of those drills like we talked about. They'll send you off to some trainers.
When you say go home, are you going to barracks? Are you going back to your house? Like, what do you mean by go home?
I had a barracks initially, and then I had an apartment a couple months or patrol or so after that. I think me and another guy got a place.
When you're out on patrol, I mean, is it difficult? Are you able to? I'm assuming you're not able to communicate with family. I know they basically use an SMS system to communicate with submarines, but are you just kind of on your own? Like, that must have been fairly stressful.
No, I mean, like used to get a month or weekly email that would have like all the like scores of like all the different sports teams. So I could like follow like my hockey team and see how like the basketball and other teams are doing. You had email too. So you could type emails to people and like we had to like surface and like actually to send those off. So it wasn't every time. And there'd be times where you weren't getting emails. And then also like the wives and the girlfriends, like they had their own like club, they got together and organized and they did some really awesome stuff of like putting together care packages and like there'd be a person who'd be like a side, like the keeper of that. Usually that's like the cob, I think, who's in charge of that, the chief of the boat. And, like there'd be dates on it. Like this date you hand out this letter to him and then like 5 days later, give him this package. And then 10 days later, give him this. Oh. This one has like his favorite candy bar, maybe like, you know, halfway through the patrol. It'll be a nice reminder. So like if you got a good girlfriend or good wife and they put something together for you like that, that makes it a little bit easier.
I was going to ask you this about so you can't receive like care packages or anything. There's not a post office. There's no planes flying.
No, this is all delivered like beforehand. They have to like plan it.
Wow. Yeah. It's got to be weird to essentially disappear for 90 days.
I always thought the fun part was coming back and like all the music's different. There's new TV shows that everybody's talking about. There's new movies. Like it's like, oh, what did I miss? What's new?
Do you have a big shock that you remember coming back from one of the five patrols?
So this is not like a cultural shock, but everybody always wants to get like McDonald's like the first day back.
Yeah.
You cannot imagine how much fast food will tear up your gut when you haven't had it in like a month or 2 months. If you've gone a long time without having it, it will fuck you up. So, oh, you gotta like ease yourself back into like the world. Get back in.
So, well, Kyle, I think one of the, you know, I've been lucky. You know, I've been lucky enough to talk to you know people like you who've served, who have done something that such a small percentage of Americans have done. Literally 1% of Americans have done. And one question I always found myself asking, well, there's two questions I always ask. One is every time I ask a general, every time I've been able to meet a general, I ask them what their favorite rank is. Every general I've ever met has given me the same answer: captain. They all love being a captain because they feel like that's the pinnacle of being out in the field with authority.
Which captain?
Navy captain? Oh, I'm sorry. Marine, like I'm talking Marine Corps, Army, and Army.
What everybody else calls a captain.
Yes, not okay, you guys. Okay. A current. So, like 03.
Yeah. Like lieutenant. I think a captain is a lieutenant equivalent. 03, right?
I believe a lieutenant's an 01.
That's Lieutenant JG. Oh, no, wait. Ensign, Lieutenant JG, then lieutenant for Navy. And then it should be commander, captain, or commander, wait.
03 refers to pay grade for a Army captain in the Marine Corps, Air Force, and lieutenant in the lieutenant. Navy and Coast Guard.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so confusing.
Right? Yeah, they're all different. But we were first. Ours should be.
In fairness. Wait, hold on a minute. There might be a good argument there, right? Kyle. It's funny because every Marine and soldier I've ever asked that to has given me the same answer. Every general has said.
What it says on their paycheck?
No.
As I say, Department of Navy, and they do not like to be reminded of that. You know what Marine stands for? My ass rides in Navy equipment.
The men's department.
Yep.
That's funny. My grandfather was a Marine. He actually joined before World War II, which was, he's like, oh, he's stationed in Panama. They're like, hey, cool. He's joined in 37. And so he's in there for a while. Like, he joins in 37, right. 41, he ends up in 41. Obviously, Pearl Harbor happens. So, like, imagine being in for 4 years. He's like, I'll finish it up. And some guy's just like, hey, World War time.
But, if that had happened, I probably would have stuck around, too.
Yeah, right. Like, what, am I going to go home and not have fun? Like, not join in?
Not, like, this is the whole reason I joined, was to learn these skills. Like, you might as well apply them. But let me be clear. I specifically joined the Navy because I realized that was the least likely way to be shot at.
Besides with nuclear weapons.
I mean, that's not, is that really being shot at?
Kind of. Yeah.
I mean, come on.
The second question,
that's being smited.
That is being smited. Is knowing everything you know, going through that process, would you join again? Would you do it again?
I think I would, actually. As much as I hated it while I was going through it, and like I got notebooks that remind me of, like, if I want to look through, like, oh yeah, you could see the bitterness in this guy. Like, as much as like I disliked it at the time, like the things that I had trouble with, the rules, the regulations, this, I don't like following things just because someone tells me to follow it. But like what I got out of it, the schooling, the education it gave me, just the, like you said, the demeanor, the knowledge that like, there's not much that can bother me. I'd do it again. I think I would. I don't think I'd stay for 20 still. I think I made the right choice for me, to not do 20, but I think the 6 was it was one of the best trades I made for my time.
What's the biggest skill you picked up?
I gotta say, it's probably the ability to learn. Not just to learn, but also I think I really learned, or I was put in a position where like they encouraged like the ability to like explain things in a better way. Like when I got to help people like doing checkouts and like qualifying on systems, I got really good at explaining how things worked in multiple ways.
You are very good
at
explaining stuff. You are very, very, thank you. You have an exceptionally good, you're exceptionally skilled at that.
I also think I have a really good memory, and that's probably why I was successful. It was just because so much of it is just rote memorization. I got really good at tests. Like when it comes to like taking a test, I don't take a test like a normal person does. I don't study everything. I look through and be like, where's the questions, the easy questions that they're going to make us learn? And I can get 85 of those. just by sniping through the material and be like, yep, that's a question, that's a question, that's a question. I'll memorize these things, and now I've got a B, and I can go fuck off for the rest of the day. Like, I learned how to do that too.
I love that. Yeah, I've used this phrase a couple times during here, but the silent service.
Yeah.
What do you think about it being referred to as a silent service? I mean, when you talk about the Navy, we talk about fleets, but at the end of the day, your type of submarine is inherently designed to be by itself in the middle of nowhere. Do you consider that an honor to be called the silent service?
It's like a badge of honor. Yeah. You're not going to, dude, that's the fun thing about doing like the drills. Like, we go play war games with other people. We actually had equipment to make us sound like other boats. Like, we'd turn on so they could track us. Flip this switch, so now we're a Russian Akula class, and now they can find us. Oh, the game's over. All right, switch it off. And then they're just like, where the fuck did they go?
You can't hear the thing carrying enough things to destroy the world.
You talk to them guys. It's unnerving when that thing disappears.
I always think something's really cool that, there's the... living where I live in this, living in New England, there's been, this is a big innovation area for the electric boats, right? For the, for the submarines. And there's a few monuments around New England, and they call attention to, especially in the 40s and in the 50s, and then obviously commemorating World War II submarines that were lost, where they refer to it as on eternal patrol for the lost submarines.
Yeah.
I find something very beautiful about that because
you're
never supposed to be known. So they never even commit to you being lost. So you're just on eternal patrol.
Right. I like that, man.
Yeah. Some of the first modern submarines were built in Quincy, actually. They were built in the, what we think of modern submarines. Yeah. They were actually built by Watson, the guy who, the first person to answer a telephone.
Okay. You talking about like the Hunley or the Turtle?
No, so like the Hunley and the Turtle.
Hunley was Civil War, right?
Yes.
Turtle was Revolutionary.
Revolutionary War. Technically not. There's some debate if those are actual submarines or if they were partially submerged boats.
Gotcha. But that's a fun one, though, by the way, the difference between a boat and a ship. So
is
what
it,
I was
like,
told
how they is, turn like
no nah, I was told a ship is a target, so a boat is a sub. The ship is anything else. You do not call a submarine a ship. If you do that, you get beat up.
I feel like we were out to dinner one time and I asked you this question. got your boats and you're very specific about you are a boat.
Yes. I kind of want to play a game, I think, one of these days. Just pick up like pictures of like different watercraft. Is it a boat or not?
Would you hit this with a weapon?
Right.
What is the... Kyle, I don't mean to stereotype, so please don't yell at me. But I do know, and I feel like you've told me this before, there's some goofy traditions on submarines. That there is some... you guys are doing some wild stuff under the seas. What is the goofiest tradition you had on the sub?
Probably a halfway night tradition where the non-useful bodies, the new guys, they dress up to entertain the crew. typically
what
by.
Up as?
you remember those skivvies I was telling you about?
See, this is why I had the question.
Yeah. It's usually like something that gets stuffed. I think I shaved my legs one year because I thought I was going to be in it.
But you're
I didn't have to.
Underwater have drag to. Show is what you're telling me?
Yeah. Our chief of the boat, he actually brought up.
Don't tell the Marine Corps this, right? Because you don't want to deal with them. They remember the follow-up for that.
The joke is it's not gay when you're underway, but it is. No, the chief of the boat one year, he brought in Hooters shorts and wore those as he served us our crab legs and lobster dinner.
Did anybody question how he got Hooters shorts?
There's a bit of a question, but I don't think anyone asked too many questions. You're watching an E9 serve everybody. Trust me. I mean, come on, dude.
It's senior most enlisted. That is amazing.
And then there's also awesome. Like just the fun that you have underway too. There's just a lot of pranking.
Pranking's going on in these super death machines.
It's usually a tradition of stealing the captain's or the XO's door. On
the
halfway night.
Executive officers, that's the boss, right? Or is that number?
Well, the second. He's the second command,
Chief of the boats, the
highest enlisted. The captain is the highest officer, and then the executive officer is his second command.
And if I remember correctly, executive officer on boomer ships is incredibly important, because aren't they the person who would validate the command to launch a nuclear weapon.
Probably. I didn't really have to deal with that too much in the back half of the boat. Was the Coners that did that?
During my research for that, I was familiar with the XO designation.
Yeah, they had like the two keys, right? They call them the Crimson Tide Locker. Yeah, I think that system got...
I always think I would be a threat to national security.
I don't know if this is true, but I thought I was told that the two key system came about because of the Crimson Tide movie. Not the Crimson Tide movie was mimicking that system actually existed.
it's an excellent idea. So I mean, so you stole the XO's door? How do you steal a door?
I stole the captain's bed. I stole his mattress. One patrol.
How big is this mattress? You're a submarine. It's tight, right?
Like, I mean, about like that wide and about 6 feet tall, probably. Yeah, there's not a lot of space to
steal that.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it's only about like that thick. I mean, just grab it and run.
Oh, Kyle, you
but
told
trying
me...
to hide that. I just threw it on top of my rack and then I slept on it.
What did they do? Are they angry? Are they pumped? I mean, they almost were probably canceled. At that position.
They were ready to cancel halfway night. Like that one actually got a little out of control. Like it starts with like the fun message, like okay, whoever brought it, bring it back. And like, haha, no fucker, I'm keeping this. Come get it. And like, you know, everyone talks a big game and then the messages get worse and worse and worse. Then eventually they start threatening to cancel the rest of the festivities. And then you got to make the walk of shame carrying the mattress.
Oh, that's awesome. I know we talked a little bit about this, but on the food side now,
Midrats was awesome. That was my favorite.
Okay. So you may have already, okay, you're already hitting the track that I'm looking at. You often make a joke to me that it says grade F food would come in there. So
that was the hamburgers food. We got.
Okay, good. So, like, was the so halfway night food was distinct.
Halfway food was amazing.
Okay.
And then I got to give credit to our, the CS, the guy who, the chief who ran the culinary group. He did a hell of a job of stocking for patrol. We had fresh eggs, fresh vegetables for much longer than I think most people would. He did a hell of a job of packing that stuff up and keeping it fresh for as long as he did. You're going like a month into it, and like you don't normally have like onions and like, you know, fresh vegetables or even milk at that point. You got UHT and powdered eggs at that.
I mean. But, you got to know, right? Like one day you show up and you're like, those are powdered eggs, aren't those?
So I think there's the stories that the chefs would like crack eggshells and like leave them laying about so it looked like just to try to trick like anybody.
But otherwise, the food was, you were.
It wasn't anything. It's just like cafeteria food. Like it wasn't anything to write home about. It was awesome that we get like pizza and like those little frozen burritos that I still love. Like those Monterey ones.
Pretty fucking fire.
That's why I love Midrats, because that's pretty much what they're putting out. Chicken nuggets and like that kind of stuff. Like hot wings some nights.
That's your midnight rations, right?
Yeah. So that was the funnest meal. Although we called those, Woody used to call it things that taste like ranch. Or his favorite meal was things that taste like ranch. Second favorite was things that taste like ketchup.
I'm not against that, dude.
Right.
Here's one for you. Yeah. What is the creepiest story? I mean, it's got to be, you're in the middle of the Pacific, like dead of night. Is there anything that you've ever creepiest or scariest moment on the sub where you're just like something that you remember?
I don't know if I'd call it like the scariest moment, but I definitely call it probably like the most miserable transit I think that I'd ever participated in. And it was the when we were pulling into Norfolk. Because you couldn't do it submerged. There wasn't, I guess, the water levels. There's not enough depth for the submarine to be able to transit underwater. And a sub on top of the water is not very stable.
No, it's a tube.
Yeah, it's a 12-hour transit, and it was also in the middle of a tropical storm. And we ended up having to turn around because we couldn't make it. Like 6 hours into it, and every person was with a bucket or just throwing up because the boat was rocking probably a good 30, 40 degrees just for 6 to 12 hours straight. And then we had to turn around and do it the next day again.
Well, at least you're not scared of it sinking. You're like, no, we're designed to do this. I'd prefer to be under the weather.
Well, you're starting to wonder if you're going to go like, because you're getting pretty close to like, how much further can this thing roll before it's going to go all the way?
Oh, right.
Like, it felt pretty fucking close a few of those times.
Oh, and then that's going to be nauseating. Top,
everybody is throwing up. The only reason why I wasn't throwing up is because I was making fun of everybody else who was throwing up.
Nerds.
Grabbing their bags and like, oh, it's squishy, gross.
Oh, that's fun. Well, so eventually your service came to an end, Kyle. When did you know? Why did you choose to depart? Were you moving on to bigger and better things? Was it you felt you accomplished everything you wanted to accomplish? Were you moving just on to a new chapter in life? What made you say I want to go back to being a civilian?
I knew from the day I joined that I wasn't staying.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Like, I knew that this was for education and skill set, to learn something useful to apply that I could turn around and make a lot more money in the real world doing. I mean, that was one of the things that I think I was most disappointed with, was that nukes, especially, it seems like the more competent you are, the more likely it seems like they were to leave and go try the civilian field. So you end up in a situation where your entire leadership is like the people who can't do that. And that's not
necessarily a very logical way to view that, guy.
I feel bad because I mentioned my sea dad, Woody. He was my first sea dad. And then I had a second one after he ended up leaving. He ended up quitting. He couldn't handle it. Wasn't the first person to. There was a few people that tapped out. But the other guy, he really thought he could convince me to stay in. And I think I broke him a little bit when I actually did quit. Like, he thought for sure he had me. And, like, he told me too. He's like, at the end of it, he's like, man, I just really, like, some guy took me aside and really showed me, like, what a good career opportunity the military was. Right. And I thought, like, you know, I had an opportunity to pay that forward and maybe convince you. I was like, dude, I really do appreciate everything you've done for me here. And, like, I get it. And I see the opportunity. It's just not for me, man. It's not for me.
And that's a mature way to view that. I mean, you probably matured so much between, what, 19 and 25, 20 and 26, God. Something like that?
Yeah. That's one way to put it.
No, but right, like that that's such a journey to do A, something that very few people can do, and B, come to that conclusion of, like, it's time for me to move on. And
it all goes back to that it gets better. It wasn't getting better. It never got better. It kept getting more responsibility and more time. Like, refit assist turned into, like, a thing where now they want me to go into engine watch supervisor qualifications, which I don't want to do because I'm not planning on sticking around. So why would I want another watch qualification? What's going to add an extra hour of training to my day, like, every day? Now, instead of going home at 4, I go home at 5. Like, right. No, fuck you. I'm not doing that. Yeah. And this is also the Chiefs can have a better watch rotation underway. Like, no, I joined up to, I shadowed the cooks and tried to be a night watch, night baker, because you had to be continuing qualifications.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One of the critiques I've read recently about the military is that there's this idea that if you're not moving up, they're trying to move you out. And that there's been a movement, and this isn't a partisan thing, this movement's been discussed for 10, 15 years, essentially throughout GWAT, is the idea of specialists, of the kind of following the warrant officer, obviously chief warrant officer, a little different. But the idea of just letting people, not saying, hey, you need to take this training, do this training, but just allowing people to kind of exist in the role and become better and better and better at it, instead of this, like, perpetual push forward, you know, be promoted or be, you know, separated. Do you think that's something the military should continue to explore? Like, the idea of just letting somebody be a specialist, be good at what they do? And
I don't know that it'll work.
Really? Okay. Can you elaborate?
I mean, you have the military is, like, designed to operate at, like, the lowest common denominator.
I think any large group of anything is kind of
I mean, that's
government's designed to do that.
Well, I mean, you mentioned my service, but I want to be clear. Like, I respect the service that you do too. I've
never had to walk around nuclear weapons. I'm just going to be honest with you. That was never a thing. I'm scared of heights and depths. I like being I'm a sea level guy. I like sea level. So, no, I mean, I appreciate the connotation, but I mean, you did a service to the country. You did something that very few people do. You, no matter what you do, if you join the service, you at some point sign your name on documentation that's saying, if I have to, I'll lay down my life for the country. I don't have to do that. We take the same oath, but there's a much different obligation between you know, a civil servant and somebody who's serving the military.
That's I'll be honest with you, I had no intention of laying my life down. They made it very clear that they didn't want us to do that either. When we actually were signing up to take the oath, like when they brought us into that room, like right at boot camp, I think they asked us, like, how many people here volunteered to give their life to their country? And everybody raised their hand. He yelled at them. He's like, no, I want people to live. You're no good if you're dead.
What's the General Patton quote? Yeah. Nobody's ever won a war by dying for the country. Before right. Some other poor dumb bastard died for his. No, yeah. I get that. I think in a nuclear exchange, I don't think you get a lot of discretion on whether or not you're doing it. You're not a friend of it. But, I mean, is it – that's so – so you – this is really interesting, Kyle. I know we're coming towards the end of this, but I really do want to explore this, which is, you think the current structure of this kind of, hey, let's get you promoted, let's keep moving you up, is overall a benefit? I'm not saying I agree with either one. I mean, obviously, as an economist, the idea of specialization I find interesting, but...
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about. Like, if you're... But there's a certain rank. Like, if you make it to, like, E5, then you pretty much can stay in for your full 20, I think. I don't think you have to advance after that point.
So you don't need to do additional qualifications, certifications,
all that stuff. I mean, it's the continuous education part that was kind of just perturbed me. But if I was staying in, like, yeah, I should have been doing that. Like, that's, if I'm due to do 20 years, then obviously, like, I'm going to be a leader at some point. I should be. Or if I'm not, then what are they doing? Like, do you really want to be the 20-year E5 that with, like, you know, the other guys who are, like, 20 years younger than you and, like, they're giving you orders? Like, is that what you want?
That's why I wanted to explore the question. Yeah. You got a good answer there. Do you regret not staying? Like, now that you would have stayed until what, 39-40 would have been a full military pension.
That would have been 22. I would have made 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you happy you didn't do it?
Yeah.
Do you think that's a, yeah.
I think you made
the right choice.
I think if I would have, because there's a lot of people, especially nukes, like there's a, enlistment bonus. The first enlistment you get is like this sweet deal that they do to really try to get you to get that first one. So you re-enlist before your 4 years is up, but they count the 2 years that you're already committed to doing as part of your re-up. So you re-up for an additional 2 to take you to 8, but you get enlistment bonus calculation for 4.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they had just bumped that up when I was eligible for it, to where it went from like 60,000 to 120,000 was the max for that.
And you declined that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
God, love you, dude. Really?
Because it's spread out over, because you're eligible to take it like 2 years. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, you started at 2 years and that's when you're eligible. It adds 6 years from that point and then it counts those 6. So that's 120,000, but that's half upfront taxed at ridiculous government rates.
Yeah, absurd.
And then the rest of it is divided by 6 and then paid out over the next 6 years. So what that really does is that takes me up to like a not even close to what I'd be getting annually. My first job at Nucor, I was making, I think I made like 110, 112, something like that. A $20,000 bonus they dumped into my 401k.
Yeah, and this is a cool thing. I don't think a lot of, you know, I teach college. So I teach the kids mm-hmm. I'm teaching are the age that would be where you were when you joined. I don't think a lot of people realize just simply how much mm-hmm. progression it allows in your job. I mean, you were able to come out of here at 20 in your 26 years old, something around there, and have a six-figure job. What part of the country were you working?
Memphis. I went to Memphis.
$100,000 plus a year in Tennessee when you're 26 sounds so much fun,
dude. The first house I have actually It was so big. It was so big that like, I could find a spider in a room upstairs. I just closed off the upstairs and never went up there again. I lived there for a year. Oh, I don't know. Still have that house, actually.
It's amazing. Like, that's so cool. And I feel like that's just really, I do think we don't realize how much. And I say this with all due respect as somebody who studies labor economics and studied labor economics, is that the benefit the U.S. military gives to people who go through it. And
I
remember shortly after I graduated college, I was volunteering at a veterans center, and I'd write resumes for people, for veterans. And what I found is just how much veterans discount their own ability.
God,
we have discussed this privately, but it's bonkers to me that you'll have a gentleman who was the tank mechanic who would be like, oh, I couldn't find a job because, you know, there's not private tanks. And I'm like, but there's buses and trains that run on diesel power who would love to have you join.
Also, you manage 20 people like for 5 years. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah. did you find that the skills you developed in the military, when I mean skills, I mean the hard skills, the tradesman skills. Did you find that was very, the private sector, or let's say the non-military sector, loved it? Like, was it easy to find
a job? Nucor specifically went and, like, headhunted nukes. They have a ton of nukes in their ranks. Alcoa was another one that tried to recruit me aggressively. I ended up working for them after the fact, but they wanted me to use my GI Bill for part of, like, going through their program, which kind of pissed me off. Like, no, you're not going to pay me less for that. Yeah.
Did you ever use your GI Bill?
No, I never actually ended up doing it. I don't think I got the extension one. So I think it ran out after 10 years. But I'd have to look and see if I still could pass that on, because I would have loved to have given it to, like, my daughter. Yeah.
Oh, I would see you just be like, dude, I'm just going to do a class myself.
I thought about it, but I just, I'd probably fail it because I don't want to do the homework. I just want to go learn.
Take my class, very little homework in my class, a lot of tests.
I can pass your test.
Yeah, you did really good on the test we did for that show. You were excellent on that. But no, so kind of to close this out, what would you tell somebody who would be looking to join the ranks of a Submariner? You know, you have this great story, this beautiful story, Kyle. And it's just so interesting. But if you're sitting across from a 17-year-old right now who doesn't know what he wants to do, and he says, hey, Kyle, I think I want to be a Submariner, what do you say to him?
I tell him to go sleep under your coffee table for like a couple weeks and just tell me if you still like it.
What an answer.
I mean, for real, like... Can you survive in cramped spaces? Because that's going to be the biggest thing that's going to hold you back. Really? Also, you might want to find out if you can handle waves, too, because we've had a few people check onto the boat, and that's when they found out they were seasick. And that makes for a miserable time.
Oh, do they do anything with that? Do they give you, like, one of those seasickness drugs?
That doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's right. That's too much. It's like you're on a cruise ship,
Keep in mind, too, that this is a sub, too, so the rocks are a lot more than you typically experience on other boats.
Kyle, thank you for giving me the opportunity to ask you the questions I've always wanted to ask somebody.
That's awesome, because Laura was really excited. I meant to mention this when we started, but she was really excited to hear what the questions were going to come from you, and I was excited too. I know what kind of questions a military veteran's going to ask me. Like, I've had those conversations before. It's the conversations with somebody who didn't serve. They're always the hardest because there's a language barrier. One, like, there's acronyms and things that you guys just don't understand. And then there's, like, I don't know what you don't know, and you don't know what you don't know. So it's hard to, like, talk about some of these things, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And I think there needs to be more dialogue between the 99% of the country that's never served. And the 1% that, protects our freedoms. And, I do believe, I have a lot of friends who hate when I say it to them, and you're probably going to hate when I say it to you, but thank you for your service. I mean, it's really an important thing that, I think, growing up, my dad was too young to serve in Vietnam, but he saw a lot of people come back from Vietnam and how they were treated. Yeah. And when I was a kid, my dad, we across the street from the school I went to, there was a Korean War Memorial. Mm. And my dad used to pull me out of school to go do the flowers on there and host different events. And one of the things my dad always taught me is he goes, after seeing, I was born in the 90s, after seeing the horrible way we treated vets coming back from Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then seeing how we treated vets coming back from Desert Storm, which was the polar opposite, where, there's a lot of veterans, there's a lot of Vietnam vets who said they didn't feel like they came home until they saw how soldiers coming back from Desert Storm were being treated. That there is some...
that must have pissed them off too, because like there was a big gung-ho like the first go round of Desert Storm, like
they got
heroes welcome when they came back, like, oh man,
a lot of Vietnam vets, and there's certainly people listening to this can look it up, who get really emotional in a positive way seeing how those, because they didn't want those soldiers to experience what they felt coming home. And the Korean War, the Forgotten War, which is called, which is crazy if you think about that.
Especially because I got MASH out of it. I mean, I don't think Vietnam got a great sitcom.
No, not a great sitcom. that I think as you know, we transition through GWAT, right? Like, you have the global war on terror. That's became more nebulous, harder to describe what service looks like. Like, you know, you like we all have, we have, you know, that one or two friends we know who went and served and saw combat, but it's only, right now, it's only about 1% of people who serve saw combat. So you're talking 1% of 1%, it's a small group. But I think there's a collective uniqueness of everybody who serves. That's just what you said, Kyle. It's a different language. It's a different culture. It's things I don't understand. So you taking this last, you know, hour and a half of kind of this raw, humorous, but also raw examination of your military service is just a huge benefit to me. And I hope it's a huge benefit to the people who, like me, didn't serve, get to kind of peek behind there and see what was it like doing one of the most unique things you can do. You lived underwater for 3 months. That's a wild thing to say. It's such a small group of people.
Also, five times, not just once.
Five times. That's fine. You spent over a year of your life essentially just playing with spicy rocks under the ocean.
I'm trying to think of how many I should have. I've got two swallows on my back. Each swallow represents 10,000 miles at sea, according to like Navy tradition. So I should have three more of them, actually. I've been meaning to get those done at some point. But
wait, you did 50,000 miles?
I think that was roughly what I calculated. Because
that's twice around the globe.
We're typically doing like 4 knots a day, or 4 knots an hour. Like, that's like typical cruising speed. And we're doing that for basically when you pull out until when you come back. So 3 months at 3 months at traveling at like 1.2 times four, whatever that works out to, like 5 miles an hour.
One of my favorite things I ever learned is a knot is 1 nautical mile at a time. So it's 1.15 miles. And you ever want to sound like you're really smart? Is that somebody's like, oh, what the hell's a knot? And you're like, oh, it's a nautical mile. It's 1.15 miles. You just times whatever the number is by 1.15.
Is it 1.15 or is it 1.2? I always thought it was 1.2. Maybe
a nautical mile is 1.15 miles. Okay. I don't know.
It's 6,000 feet, right?
Yeah, about 6,000 feet.
Okay, yeah.
Because just measurements. But yeah, that's a good one. If anybody's listening, a knot is a nautical mile. Because nobody knows what a nautical mile is. Because it's an absurd measurement. So, you know, Kyle, as we end this, I just, again, like, I want to say thank you. But also, I want to say, like, this has been so interesting. This has been such an honor to be able to sit here and talk to you. So what do you want to leave us on? How do you want to close this, sir?
I guess my question is, like, are people interested in this? Are they interested in this kind of content? Because I've got a pretty good network, I think, between, like, you, me, and, like, other people that I know. I'm pretty sure we could fill another podcast of just vets and their stories. I think it'd be amazing.
I would love to interview people. Just, I would love to be able to sit down and hear their stories. I know you're obviously fantastic at it, so I think it'd be very fun to... Just to hear what people talk about.
I think I'm good for having just a little bit of that extra, like, language. I can speak a little bit of the language, at least. I'm tough with, like, I don't feel like I'd be qualified talking to combat vets, but I could definitely get, like, Navy guys on here.
Maybe we could.
I actually am thinking about maybe I should reach out to Eric Smolinski and see if, because he was a Marine. He was a Marine officer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think he might be a really good one for this, too.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be...
But actually, if I can leave on something, you talked about the stories, or the pranks, I think was one of the things you asked about. I wanted to tell a story about one of my shipmates, just because he ended up taking his life a few years after getting out of the service. So just in honor of him, so I'll tell two here. He used to mess with he was an ELT, so they're like the chemist on the submarine. They're the mechanics who are actually smart. No offense, mechanics. They're the, like, really smart mechanics. They're the ones that play, like, WoW and EverQuest when they're free time. Like, that's the ELTs. He was one of those guys. His LPO was this dude who used to put on, like, 100 pounds in port. We'd come in to start the patrol weighing 280 pounds, and then he'd do nothing but eat soup for like 3 months and lose like 100 pounds, check in like weighing like 170, 180 by the end of the patrol. It was insane. Wow. Yeah. The guy looked like he lost a whole person. Vioc. So Vioc get a hold of his belt. The belts are like cloth, right? I don't know if you've seen them. They got like a class belt that clasps onto it. We get like a fancy one that has like the boat insignia on it. But while he was sleeping, he'd grab his belt and like snip off like just like a quarter inch of the belt and then put it back and not tell him. So you do that like once a week. So throughout the entire patrol, his belt's just getting tighter and tighter, and this whole time he's losing weight like crazy too.
It's a great prank. That is like, that's a very intelligent prank.
Oh my god, he did some good ones like that. The other one I wanted to tell is when he burned the shit out of his hand by opening up a steam valve on accident. Oh. Claiming to everybody, he'd come up and tell me, he's like, dude, you see that? I got this saving your life. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, this valve, you know, we're doing this test, and then we opened this valve, and then it started dumping steam in the engine room. I grabbed the Tygon tubing and clamped it shut with my hand while the steam, like, directly from, they're sampling the steam generator, so it's just coming straight out, filling the compartment, and he's shutting the valve off while he's clamping it shut. He had a blister that basically took up his entire hand. And I was like, Adam, you saved us from yourself. You're the one who opened the valve. You don't get to be a hero for for saving us because of your fuck up.
Oh man. Well, this is for Adam, right?
Yeah.
Well, Kyle, thank you again, buddy. This was awesome. This was truly one of the biggest honors I've had. Be able to sit down and talk with you, and you know, again, thank you for everything. Thank you for the candidness. I'm sure there's a lot of people who, especially young people, who are curious about have the same questions I've had.
You know, actually, I will say that too. If anybody does have any questions, I mean, my email is pretty much all over the website. I think reach out anytime. Anybody's got questions, I'm happy to tell you anything you want to know. And I'll tell you, I won't try to sell you like your recruiter will. I'll tell you the truth. I'll tell you what's good, and I'll tell you what's bad.
Yeah.
All right, we should probably wrap it up then. It's actually gone on for 2 hours. I don't even think I'm going to edit this. I think I'm just going to put this out straight.
I'm a fan. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And I'm actually very awkward doing the sign-off because usually I leave it up to Kyle.
I know, right? Like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a group. No, that's the wrong one. Can we get the music for Anchors Away? Maybe just play that?
I'm sure that's just the... That's got to be public domain.
I mean, it's been around since like the 1700s, hasn't it? It's like the battle hymn of the Navy. Then. Yeah, I think we're fine.
Yeah, we're fine.
All right, play us out.